Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon, and you just got the entire Aretha Franklin clip because here in the little house in the big woods, we are out of power, and so I'm sort of casting the blind. Luckily, I have a laptop I'm using and a cell phone I'm using, and so the neighborhood is dark, the power is out, the Arctic vortex has arrived, and so we're going to wing it today. Our show, as always, is a part of the Be the Media Project. If you'd like to be a part of our team, come to www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. Be the media. I have to tell you, I can't even read my note cards because I'm in the dark. One of our two guests has been able to come into Blog Talk Radio today. Both our guests are from Oregon. And we are all experiencing similar weather fronts right now. Kate Waldrick is not yet with us, and she's in the worst part of the storm than I am. But with us today and on the line now is Manju Bafil. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Thanks, Janine. It's nice to be here.
Oh, it's I'm so glad you could make it in. Now, there's a bio about you on our Lunch with Loudon Facebook page, and I tried to give everybody a heads up to who's going to be in this conversation with us today. Maybe you could probably do an even better introduction of yourself if you don't mind taking a minute.
Well, I'm happy to do that. As you said, my name is Manju, and I am a strong proponent of the public voice, the wise public voice, being an inherent part of democracy in the United States. And that's what brings me to the show today as a guest, because I have the privilege of being a key volunteer for the Citizens Initiative Review in Jackson County. And I'm on the board of directors of Healthy Democracy, which is in charge of producing that program throughout the state of Oregon. And I am an ex-business consultant. I have had my own radio show in the Bay Area, and an ex-award-winning school teacher as well. So that's a little bit of background for me. And one more thing I'll add is that I am absolutely committed to giving the rest of my life to seeing how we can actually become a representative of the genius of democracy that our founders envisioned.
Well, and that's why I'm so glad you're here. Because, you know, even though, you know, I posted an announcement of this show today on our Join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page, and pretty much people thought we're going to be coming here and doing science bashing, or we're going to be arguing the point of GMOs. And I think the degree to which we discuss GMOs is sometimes it's a clearing for our own, you know, from where we speak. But I am concerned about the process of this most recent election more than the outcome. And so I was hoping what we would be talking about today is basically what we learned from this initiative petition. And so for those people that haven't read, that haven't seen the Facebook post or don't follow us on Lunch with Loudon, Oregon, they basically called just last night the election for a referendum that would cause certain products that contain GMOs and raw materials that are GMO produced to be labeled. The vote, let's see, 1.5 million people cast votes. As a matter of fact, Oregon had a 68% voter participation, but it still means a third of the registered voters in our state did not vote. It came down to just over 6,000 vote point spread, which is, you know, 1% of the people who didn't vote. And in the process of, you know, so I've sort of seen this particular issue and this particular vote as kind of a microcosm, or I called it in my post a petri dish, for where elections are going. And Manju, what I really appreciate is that in the midst of all the money that came into the state, record-breaking amounts of money, almost all from out of the state, $20 million against the initiative, $8 million, $9 million for all the ads we saw, all of the paper we got in the mail that we couldn't recycle because it was all plastic, you know, infused. It was crazy making. How is a citizen supposed to actually weigh through, vet these facts, and cast an informed vote? Because here at Coffee Party, of course, what we're concerned about is that people take their rightful role as active citizens and that they find a way to be informed, to become informed, and to participate in the conversation with which we inform, as opposed to be a consumer of political media. And you were a part of a group that tried to do just that, and I'd love to have you explain to our listeners what that project was.
Well, first of all, congratulations without lights, notes, or your computer on recalling all of those facts and information. I'm impressed. We get so used to having at our fingertips so much data at a moment's notice. The idea of working in the dark without any of those tools is a fascinating one. First of all, I want to say I really appreciate what you all at the Coffee Party are doing and your level of commitment about being informed and active citizens, because that is really what needs to happen in order for us to change our existing democratic structure. We have a system that I think even the data proves, almost all of us agree, is not working functionally in any way at this point. And the idea that citizens can actually show up and make a difference in how we are working together is a very exciting idea to me. And it's certainly what brought you and everybody who's part of the coffee party together. So I applaud you, and I'm very grateful for your work in this way. And I do want to talk a little bit about Healthy Democracy and the Citizens Initiative Review, because I think it is a thrilling experiment. But first, I want to create a context of Oregon itself. Oregon was the second state in this country to adopt the initiative process in 1902, but we were the first state to use it, and it quickly spread throughout the United States to, I think, about 24 other states in the country. And it became known as the Oregon Plan, and it was actually one of the innovations between the late 1800s and the 1920s that was applauded in relation to democracy moving forward in this country. So that's a little background for those of us that are in Oregon right now listening to this. We have a strong tradition in this country of encouraging citizens to become involved. Now, since then, what's happened with the initiative process, not only in this state but in many others, is we have used it a lot. Oregon uses the initiative process more than any other state in the country. And inherent in using something a lot, of course, is embedded issues that need to be strengthened and improved. And that's why the Citizens Initiative Review was created, because a high percentage of voters, 75%, said they found the initiative very difficult to understand or to wade through or to realize what the unintended consequences could be if, in fact, those initiatives were passed. And two-thirds of the voting public in Oregon, through a scientific study, said that they had actually voted on issues, on initiatives, that they didn't understand. So we know that there's a way we can make initiatives more user-friendly and more effective. And that's why the Citizens Initiative Review was created. And I don't know if you want me to say more about what it actually is at this point, Janine, or if you have a specific question you want to interject.
It hadn't occurred to me to give people who do not live in Oregon the background, but I think that's was excellent, because here, sometimes I think we actually take this ability for granted. And sometimes, I have to admit, it's not only difficult to vet any one initiative, but I don't remember what the record number was in any given election, but I think it was like 30. I mean, it was it was really challenging. And so my personal philosophy had to become years ago that if I don't understand it, I vote no. You know, I don't not vote. I vote no. Because I think that this whole, it used to be a problem that you'd get sort of taken, you know, you'd drift to sea sort of on the wave of trying to figure out, sometimes just by the title of an initiative, and it was very, very difficult. And so it is, if we're going to be active citizens, if we're going to be informed voters, we need, if you just have your go-to, right, if you just say, well, if he likes it, I don't, or if you say he likes it, I do, that's not really, I mean, that's better than just going by the title of the initiative. But we've learned here in Oregon also that we actually have a title review, initiative title review, so that the name of a bill isn't allowed to be misleading, because so many people vote from the name of the bill alone. And so while I understand why people become overwhelmed, I mean, I don't know what other states do, if they have like 30 initiatives on in addition to the normal thing, because all initiatives are put out by the people by, you know, petitions went out, and it required signatures, and the signatures were vetted, and it's a huge process. And sometimes you almost have to wonder, why are we the people so involved in making our law, right? As opposed to, I mean, why should we so often need to go that far? But And you know, if you have a comment to that, by all means, you know, jump in.
Yeah, well, what I would say is actually the reason I gave the context of Oregon, even though I know there are probably many people listening that don't live here, is that this idea of public citizens being able to create state law at the ballot box is a very powerful one, and it caught fire. There was one of the Dakotas, Oregon, and then all of a sudden it spread to a total of 26 states. I think 24 of them have a very similar issue, similar initiative process. And so that means that over half of the states in this country have the capacity for public citizens to create state law at the ballot box if, in fact, they see something is not being addressed by their state legislatures. That is powerful. So then the question is, okay, how do you take that privilege, which is an extraordinary one, and make sure that you maximize it so that together, as we vote on initiatives, we're doing that in a way that is very intelligent so that we're moving the bar forward and we're getting more of what we want and less what we don't want. And there have certainly been, as you said, many initiatives that have been voted on, and inherent in that some unintended consequences where we've gone after the fact, which is why the titling commitment that you talked about is so important, you know. It's part of the transparency of it all.
Right, and integrity. I think there's a keen need to have this be a very forward conversation and not a marketing conversation. And I think that's what we tend to do. It's kind of human nature to sort of not only listen to the marketing conversation, but to sort of give the marketing conversation. This is what I think and why, you know. But you were sort of bringing this back to this the GMO bill, the labeling bill.
Yeah, yeah.
You live in Ashland, so down south. Was it Josephine County already passed a GMO related statute? Yes.
Yes. Well, actually, Josephine County and Jackson County, where I reside, both passed ordinances to ban the growing of genetically engineered plants. And that's to protect our microenvironments here, because we have the capacity to grow some certain species that because of the lay of the land here, literally, contamination is a huge issue. And it had started to happen. One of our organic farmers here actually had to pull up his crop because he wasn't able to guarantee that it was all organic when he found that GMO seeds that could have been contaminating his fields were grown a half a mile away. So that's what started it here. And a group of people met regularly. They were the steering committee for this ballot measure. And they really didn't necessarily have experience doing this before, but were very committed to protecting the local organic farmers here. And so they moved the initiative through the process, got the ballot signatures. The county commissioners did not vote to put it on the ballot. And because of the law, and again, I'm not an expert on this, but this is what I know, because of the law and because the number of signatures had been verified, it did get to be on the ballot within a certain period of time. And so that's how it ended up on our ballot locally. And the Citizens Initiative Review, which I'm happy to explain if you want me to, happened here on that particular ballot initiative. It was actually Measure 15-119 here locally. And proponents for the initiative spoke, proponents against the initiative spoke, and then a statement was written to explain the key findings. So what are the facts about this situation and this initiative that the public needs to know? And what are the key arguments in favor of voting for it? And what are the key arguments in opposition to it? And those were all laid out in a one-page sheet and distributed to voters around Jackson County. And the measure in Jackson County passed with a high margin, 66% of the voters in Jackson County voted to ban the growing of GMO plants in Jackson County. And I don't know, because I don't live in Josephine County, what their actual statistics were, but I do know that the ban passed there as well. So how that happened, how the Citizens Initiative Review happened, is that a letter is sent out to a random sampling using the voter's guide, and people respond that they'd be interested to sit on the panel, and then that panel of 20 people is created to represent the voting population. And so the panelists are actually selected by number, not by name, so you don't even know who they are. And that you make sure that you balance the whole panel by age, party affiliation, location of residence. I mean, are you over 10,000? Are you living in an area that has over 10,000 people or under 10,000 people? Gender, ethnicity, education, and voting history. So what we got to see here in Jackson County was 20 people who really do represent, from a demographic perspective, the voting population of the county, come together tentatively, you know, like, how is this going to work? We don't know how to talk on the outside, but by the use of a brilliantly designed process, not only talk with each other and listen to advocates speaking on both sides of the issue, but then be enlivened by what people that have different perspectives than yours are saying, and also be open-minded to seeing a larger context for the issue than just the context that you walked in with. And I sat in the back of the room because this is a completely transparent process. So the public is able to come anytime it's happening and sit in the back of the room and watch it. And I got to sit in the back of the room the entire time and watch this group of 20 people who actually are quite diverse in a lot of ways come together as one body with the ultimate goal of figuring this out and writing it down in plain, easy-to-understand language for their neighbors, so that together in Jackson County we could be smarter as we voted on this initiative.
Well, and what I appreciate about this process that's been invented and tried a few times now is that it's not about sometimes when you people kind of tried the term civility or compromise or common ground, finding common ground, they as though it means to dilute one's values or to somehow sacrifice something for another thing. And this process merely allows all points of view to be shared and discussed and you know, there's a majority opinion, there's a minority opinion, there's you don't just get we support this or we don't support this, but you also get a list of all the reasons why or all the reasons why not. And so it's very clear that you can take a look at the document produced by this group and see that they've had a thoughtful conversation and this is what they found. And so it kind of filters out that kind of, I don't know what to, you know, it filters out the excessively marketing kind of conversation and kind of gets down to the fundamentals that support one side or another. There was a similar process for Measure 92. And
yes.
the video of the results of that process are posted on the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page. And it was kind of telling for me that actually of the 20 people, only 9 of, well, maybe it was 25 for that one, but the measure had fewer supporters, less than half.
First of all, it was a different measure, I just want to say. You know, the measure in Jackson County, which had to do with banning the growing of genetically engineered plants, was different from the labeling measure at the state level. Yeah.
Yes. But so what I love about that is that you can actually have the same issue, or not the same issue, but topic, genetically modified organisms, right? And you can bring that grander topic down to your specific question. And I was even surprised by some of the people who found that Measure 92 was inappropriate, maybe not based on science, but based on the language of the law. I mean, there were all kinds of reasons why people were for it or against it. But I'm very pleased to see this kind of dialogue being made available to citizens. So, I don't know, you were about to say something about the difference, I think.
Well, no, I just wanted to make that clear to people that are listening that don't live in Oregon and wouldn't have known that they were different. But I love what you're saying about this and the objective in this experiment, and it's still in the experimental phase. Let's face it, you know, we're not experienced at doing this as a culture. So
right.
I think one of the things that we have to do is give ourselves a break and realize that every iteration of an experiment is going to show us something we didn't see before, and then we have the opportunity to improve upon it based on the feedback loop, you know? So, but as you so beautifully articulate, the whole point in writing the citizen statement is first to make the easy to understand and accessible, because it's written in layman's language, not legalese, and to make it fact-based. So that what you're reading is what the panelists did to the best of their ability, given the time allotted, to come up with statements that are reliable and dependable and fact-based. And that is the objective. And in at the state level, yes, you're right. The vote was 9 for the GMO labeling initiative and 11 against. And when you read the statement, you see that some of that has to do with the way the initiative was actually written.
Yeah.
So one of the secondary goals in that Healthy Democracy has in relation to Citizens Initiative Review is encouraging activists in realizing, hey, there's going to be a public hearing possibly on the initiative you write, so write it carefully and pay attention so that you're presenting exactly what you want to the public for them to vote on.
Yeah, and I do think that's a good distinction, because there are certainly groups of people who are not, who are very cautious the use of genetically modified organisms, who still did not support the bill because of the language of the law. And I think that that's it. So we get so history will be clear about why they took the position they took. That's the other thing I like, is that we not only look forward in this grand, frankly, this republic's democracy is still an experiment, right? Let alone this process. And so when we going forward, we get to look back on this. And so if I were to draft an initiative petition, I would be informed by the concerns of some very thoughtful people about how a bill needs to contain itself, or how specific it needs to be, or how general it needs to be. Because frankly, when you've got $20 million coming into the state almost exclusively from outside Oregon to fight a piece of legislation, you got to know that they've got a lot of lawyers and they've got a lot, you know. So a good intent isn't enough. You have to have good execution. And but because if you do have a righteous notion, well, then it'll stand the test. It'll stand the test of this kind of scrutiny, and then the downstream test of the scrutiny of the voters. So I am very encouraged about this, especially the nonpartisan nature of it. I realize that are you a Democrat, are you a Republican, are you an independent, was a part of the algorithm blind to the notion of party affiliation, but it's not dominated by party affiliation. And that is just a breath of fresh air to me.
Yes, I agree with you. Well, you and I are like minds in the recognition that what if everybody who came to the table had something to contribute, and we acknowledged that at the outset. You know, even if I am ideologically 180 degrees from your perspective, what if I listen to you respectfully enough so that I see what you're trying to communicate to me, and there's the moment of, oh, hey, yes, and we can include that piece too, or that makes it stronger, or that makes it, that eliminates one potential unintended consequence that I didn't want either. So it is pretty exciting to watch in real time people who really are extremely diverse have these kinds of conversations. And
it's
capacity building for our culture too, right? The more we do this, the more we can do it. People will begin to actually communicate in this way rather than simply being a talking point person who's not really interested in anything but convincing the other person.
There
was a great story that... Sorry, I stepped on you a little bit there. There was a great story that one of the men that was in the group in Jackson County spoke about in the checkout circle at the end. He said that he had gone home in the evenings and talked to his two young teenage boys about what was happening for him and how encouraging it was and what he was learning from the process of being on that panel of 20 people. And I just thought, well, there you go. We just don't know how powerful these experiences can be in relation to changing our culture. So the more, and you and I both know many leaders in this field who are creating some amazing experiments for us to play around with to make our society wiser.
Absolutely. And, you know, your earlier comment about respect is just, you know, this is a drum you know, it's like in the background with me all the time. And when people talk to me, they're going to hear this respect, respect, respect coming in the background. And I was an employer for too many years to not really learn to live the truth of the fact that even a stopped clock is right twice a day. You know, the minute you stop listening to somebody, in my case, an employee, because they're problematic or they talk too much or, you know, they talk too loud. There's a million reasons why a human being will select things out of their world, right? And so the minute you stop listening to somebody, they're going to have something brilliant to say. It's some kind of Murphy's Law. And so there's brilliance around that table, brilliance. And as a matter of fact, you and I were both at a conference recently, and one of the realizations I had at the conference was that polarization is the antidote to American ingenuity. It's like if you don't want that magical, mystical thing called American ingenuity to kick in and solve problems in a way you never conceived of, which was never possible until people came together with all the creative tension of their differences, but a common commitment that failure is not an option.
Mm.
We accomplish amazing things. And the one thing I've seen that puts a damper on that is to divide people, divide people, divide people, so that they lose respect for one another. Therefore, they lose the ability to hear one another. You know, it's like we have to learn listening all over again when you step out of that sort of cultural norm that's developed where respect is earned as opposed to presumed. And, you know, so again, processes like this to me just underscore the truth in that we really can, when we come together, come up with something powerful and unexpected and appropriate.
Well, that's what makes us feel alive. That's what makes us happy to be alive, too. And I love what you say about creative differences, because it is that conflict, it is the dissonance itself that causes the brilliance to emerge from the conversation. And I don't think we're so good at that anymore, do you, as a culture? I think we're more afraid of conflict than we've ever been before, even as we've hunkered down into our corners of opposition.
Oh, right. It's much more fashionable to be passive-aggressive than it is to be, to just step forward and say, I don't understand what you just said. I need some help here. You know, this is what I thought. What do you think? And why do you think that? And this is why I think that. I mean, some people call that a fight. And I call that candor. You know, I call that being trusting you enough to risk letting you know who I am. And the power generated there is there's such synergy in our bringing our differences to the table. And there's such, I don't want to say a dumbing down, it's more like a numbing down if we're not allowed to disagree or to, you know, to when you transform a disagreement into a denigration, man, there you are, down there in the, I don't know what.
And I think we all end up being there. We all end up being literally down in the dumps. You know, it's those kinds of conversations that are denigrating, where we start name calling. Then we all end up feeling worse than we felt at the beginning of the conversation. And what I've seen with some of these processes, the Citizens Initiative Review being the one we're kind of focusing on today because of the GMO initiative, is that those processes are so impeccably designed, not perfectly designed, and they continue to be with every iteration refined, because that's really how life is, right? But they are so well designed that they support civility and they support our listening to each other in respectful ways. End of the day, we feel better than we did before the conversation started or at the beginning of the conversation. One of the things that we just happened to notice at the Citizens Initiative Review in Jackson County is that the second and third days, everyone showed up 30 minutes early for the dialogue, and people were driving. You know, Jackson County is big geographically. Not everyone lived close to the facility where we were having the event. So we were just amazed. People couldn't wait to get there and get to work. And I think there might have been one or two people that showed up maybe 20 minutes before we started, but literally at 15 minutes before start time, 100% of the participants were there. And that is outrageous to me.
That's like standing in line for a concert.
Yeah, ooh, or to get your new iPhone.
There you go. Well, don't you think, I mean, we're straying off topic a little bit, and I'll bring it back to this initiative in a minute. But see, everything you've just said is why I really think that the national debate, we're coming into the presidential season, right? It's always 2 years out now. That's problematic. But this is why I think that any viable contender should be allowed to participate in presidential debate. You know, so if it's the Democratic candidate and the Republican candidate and the Green Party candidate and the Independent Party candidate and the... And it's not even so much that it may or may not influence the outcome, but it will totally alter the conversation. It will not be the same talk. We won't get to stay with bumper stickers. We won't get to have people sitting on the sidelines putting up their scorecards. Ooh, you know, the blue guy won that one and the red guy won that one. I mean, I'm sorry, but the debate would become a drinking game. You know, every time somebody says transpartisan, take a shot. And it's because we're not allowing the diverse and rich variety of points of view that have risen to leadership in our country to participate.
I appreciate that. Because we have seen in the last few years, as populist movements have risen up and gained the attention of the media, how those movements have changed the conversation and have moved the bar. So what you're saying is let's expand who's in the conversation so we can have a better one. And that sounds like a really good idea to me.
Right. It's exactly why we need to do it, because the quality of the conversation is so degraded. You have the commentators ahead of time telling you what they're going to be. Well, that's sure worth my time.
Well, you know, actually, I'm 65 years old, and I remember when presidential debates were juicy, and they were clever, and they were funny, and you learned a
yes.
lot. And there we go back to the importance of, because as we've gotten more and more, I'm using air quotes now, refined in our debate process that is televised, we have lost the soul of the debate. And we have
yes.
lost the opportunity as Americans to really distinguish the fundamental differences between candidates. And so one way that these kinds of experiments are going to change us, I believe, as a culture, is not only are we going to have capacities that we didn't have before, but we're also going to see the power of process and the importance of designing good processes so that the American public, first of all, gets the information that they need in order to vote effectively, and secondly, has a deeper understanding of the issues that are before their politicians to vote on.
So, announcement. My power just came back on, and when my power came back on, I can see that there are other people on the line with us. Apparently, because we were connected before the power went out, you and I were still able to talk. And it looks like Kate Wildrick is actually with us. Kate, I've opened your mic. Are you there?
I am. Hello.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know you were there. I don't know how long you've been listening, but welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Oh, thank you. You guys have been having a wonderful conversation, and just it's very inspiring to hear your points of view.
Well, thanks a lot, and we're certainly hoping you could contribute a point of view to all of this. But as I said, my screen was pretty dark, and my power has just come back on. So you're calling in from St. Helens. You're at the Ingenuity Innovation Center there. You're a co-founder, and you have a particular perspective you bring to this conversation, and I'd just like to open up and see where you'd like to chime in. You know, I don't know where to throw you given how long we didn't know you were there, so my apologies.
No worries. One of the things that really grabbed me about the conversation was Amanji was talking about these different kinds of experimental places for a community to come together and begin to have dialogues and conversations around these somewhat challenging topics. And this is one of the endeavors that we've certainly focused in on. So to bring everybody up to speed, here at Ingenuity, our vision is to create a space for the community to come and connect with one another to create sustainable solutions. And everything that we co-create together, we share using an open source platform. So one of the landmark projects that we're best known for is around aquaponics, which is the merger of growing fish and vegetables together. There's some amazing benefits that are associated with doing something like this, but what I think one of the most magical things are around this is that it's a great community building endeavor, in that people get to see an ecosystem and have a relationship with their food. So it's been a great conversation piece to talk about, you know, GMOs and hybrids, you know, our food system, to get people to connect with that and connect with each other about what our needs are.
So did you participate in any way with this most recent ballot measure, like Measure 92, or are you like us, sort of a voyeur and a voter?
Well, we did. We definitely were in support of the labeling piece. My background is I actually had worked in the food industry sector in manufacturing and processing. And one of the things, as we would bring people through on tours through the center, is that we have several big bulk containers that food ingredients were stored in that we've used for repurposing for our aquaponic setup and system. They get cut down and they're essentially our grow beds. And I pointed out on every single tour that we brought people through was that isn't it interesting to note that these containers have labels on them already identifying that these are GMO-free and organic ingredients. And people were like, wow. So basically, as a food processor, you have that option of buying those materials. But as a consumer, you don't. And doesn't this dispel the myth that it's going to be more expensive? Absolutely. After working in the food industry, labels change all the time. Think about it from a marketing perspective. There's always changes happening. And we would have a whole process and design for that. So the reality is that I think people are wanting to know more. And there's this desire for transparency, and especially with a lot of the health issues that we have heard just from people coming through the center and talking about, you know, for example, we have a nurse that works at Providence, and she was talking about a lot of these children that are born to migrant workers that are working out in the fields applying these very toxic pesticides, and these children are born with their intestines on the outside. It's gotten the doctors thinking, wow, if this is going on our plants, you know, and they're breathing it and we're ingesting it, this can't be good. We know that this is what pesticides are doing when they're applied. Now we're actually putting these types of things into our food on a genetic level. This can't be good either. So it just kind of makes everybody weary. And the more that, you know, what I'm hearing for is transparency. How do we know exactly what we're buying?
And it's also just a matter of choice, isn't it? It's like the science that might convince you may not convince someone else, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't have a choice. And I think that that's a big part. You may have heard us discussing earlier when we said, you know, the group that reviewed this, the Citizen Initiative review for this particular initiative, was as concerned about the language of the initiative as they were the intent. And I guess what we've learned the hard way in Oregon, because we have referendum, is that if the language isn't tight, the intent doesn't matter. And there's room for neglect or abuse. But I could, given that this is so close, you know, 6,000 votes out of 1.5 million, and given that there may be people who will be doing recounts or whatever, I anticipate that if in the end this initiative fails, that there will be another initiative soon. It will learn the lessons of citizen review. It will learn the lessons of the conversations that you have with the folks at Ingenuity. And I think that we may be looking at being able to move together towards some kind of agreement. I know that people in my circles are concerned because the folks that we used to consider our watchdogs, our regulators, so to speak, that would normally, you know, it would normally be in their hearings that these conversations might occur, are being underfunded, understaffed, and not so engaged in regulation as they used to be. Oftentimes, being, you know, departments being run by folks from industry. Yes. And so, whether I think we need a little acid test or a little input to make sure that that system that may appear to be leaning one direction or another actually is not. I mean, the appearance of cronyism or the appearance of corruption does not guarantee the fact of corruption. But and so the tools like these conversations and the tools like the transparency that we're all asking for make it possible to have some faith that the outcome is as intended as advertised. Yes?
I completely agree with that. One of the exciting things for me was with all of the discussion around the initiative, people began to go, wow, I never really thought about that, or it wasn't on my radar. I haven't really known much about GMOs, and they began to start building an awareness about it. So I think that we're going to have continued discussions around it. And what I love is that there's these existing platforms and models for community discussions, just as we've talked about today, that can help us discern and decide which path is best for our community to move forward to.
I agree. So I have another surprise for everybody. I now have Debbie Lynn calling in. My goodness, I thought she was on an airplane. So I'm going to open her mic. Debbie Lynn, welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Well, hi there. Well, now that I'm off the plane and off the train, I'm in a stable location where I could call in for a few minutes, and I was just checking out my email while I was listening to the show, and one of the things in my email was a forward from a friend of mine who worked on the Measure 92 in Oregon, who said that there are 13,000 contested ballots that we can help uncontest them, if you will, so that they count, and that may make up the difference of that 6,600 votes that Measure 92 is currently failing by.
Well, breaking news.
Wow.
You heard it first here at Lunch with Loudon.
That's great news. It is. It came with a request for a campaign contribution, but it still to hold out that much hope with 13,000 contested ballots. That would be great.
Well, and that's amazing. They didn't say anything about the nature of being contested?
It did not.
They were.
It just says that they were, and it doesn't say, you know, if these folks have even voted on the Measure 92 issue or not. I was just about to go to the Secretary of State's website to see if I could find anything there, and you called on me.
Well, excellent. Well, feel free to continue. But, you know, Oregon is a vote-by-mail state, and so one of the reasons we have tremendous returns here in a midterm election where some states are coming in under 30%. We have the 67% return because of the efficacy of this kind of voting method. But I do know that Washington State also does this, and there's a new, it's now trendy to challenge signatures because, you know, that's your ID. Your signature is your identification. And so there was surprisingly low the voting there, but a suspected high number of signature challenges. So I don't know that it's going to be a message or an outcome determiner at this point, but it was interesting that that's happening. So I just see that we lost Kate. She dropped, and given the wind outside right now, I'm not surprised. And I don't know how much longer I'll have power, but this has been such a wonderful conversation. I guess I'm sort of looking for closing remarks from everybody. And Kate is back. I'll open her mic. Great. Where would we like to see this go? How do we envision the things we're learning from this tightly contested race that includes very volatile points of view on the extreme end, but a lot of conversation that can and should occur in the midst of them, yes? Where do we go from here as active citizens and as informed voters? Maybe my question didn't make any sense, but Manju, maybe you could help me out here.
Well, I was just waiting for Kate because I'm so disappointed personally that I didn't know she was on the line and that we didn't have advantage of her for the entire hour. But Yeah, I think where we go from here is learning from where we are now. We see that we have a process that will allow us to review future initiatives. We see that future initiatives can be written in such a way that it takes the confusion out of it, and so it's easier for people to know whether to vote yes or no. We see that more people know about GMOs than did 4 years ago, and that is a very important part of the process. And what else, Kate? What else are we learning from this?
What I'd like to see is the curiosity. It's so easy to just get locked into, you know, one perspective or a research study or this, that, and the other. And the reality is our world's constantly changing, and it's not just in the scientific world or the political world. It's with everything. So part of this is an opportunity to take an issue like this and build community around it through our curiosity by seeking out different opinions and really thoughtfully looking at what are the core themes that are trying to emerge and how do we help address the needs of all while paying it forward seven, you know, generations down the road. That's part of, you know, thinking is not just what the immediate quick return is, but really making thoughtful and mindful decisions.
Exactly. So I'm now looking at my board, and I'm surprised to see that one of our other Coffee Talk Radio hosts has his hand up. I'm going to let him sign in and sign out at the same time. Bobby Rodrigo.
How is everybody? I wanted to call earlier, and I got busy. As you know, my days are crazy, but this is a very important issue to me. As you know, it's an area that I work on a lot, involving with the March Against Monsanto many years, and Jeffrey Smith and the Institute of Responsible Technology, and I'm so happy that you're talking about it, and I was excited again about the Oregon Initiative and glad to hear that it still might be a window. And my closing remark would be, make them pay. Use the marketplace as well to impact this issue. For those that shop in like Costco has been moving to the organic food area in an amazing way, at least here in Georgia. And urban farming and the things that are being talked about by the lady in St. Helens is also wonderful. Make it so your community can sell their own products in the local stores and stuff. Make the GMO monsters pay in the marketplace. I'm glad you did the issue.
Thanks, Bobby. Thanks. I do think, you know, just as an aside to what he just spoke to, is that I feel like I vote every day. I vote my conscience every day. And so I do that with my, you know, consumer dollars as well as with my, you know, vote as a citizen. So I think that's always a good point. And Bobby, I hope you've been checking out all of the posts that we've done to sort of connect you to the process for the conversation that's been going on with the Citizens Initiative Review, for example. So Debbie Lynn.
Yes. I came to the party late, had a great time, was happy to deliver the news, and I am feeling warmer in California today.
Oh, my gosh, yes, you are. Well, thank you for taking a few minutes to join us. Manju, thank you so much for a wonderful conversation. It was a lot of fun sitting here in the dark. It was kind of like we were having coffee and waiting for the sunrise or something. And Kate, I am so sorry that I wasn't able to see that you were available, and I appreciate so much everything you had to say today. And frankly, we could probably do part two when we find out how this really shakes out. But more than that, I love leaving a conversation feeling stronger and more alive. And when we talk about how real people who care about themselves and each other and the neighborhood, so to speak, how it is we can muster ourselves to create the world we seek without destroying anybody in the process, it's always a good day for me. So I want to thank you both for your contributions to Lunch with Loudon today and to Coffee Talk listeners. So with that, if I can actually make my board work, I'll give us a little music to walk out with. But most of all, I just want to say to everyone, coffee party on.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.